JC Corcoran Podcast.
She never tells me that she's sick of this house. She never says, why don't you get off that couch? She don't cost nothing when she wants to go out. I want you to love me like my dog. She never says I need a new attitude. Her and your sister ain't always in a feud. When I leave the seat up, she don't think that it's rude. I want you to love me like my dog does, baby. When I come home, want you to just go crazy. She never looks at me like she might hate me. I want you to love me like my dog. She never acts like she don't care for my friends. She never asks me where the hell have you been. She don't play dead anytime I walk in. I want you to love me like my dog does, honey. She never says I wish you made more money. She always thinks that for my fingers funny. I want you to love me like my dog. She don't get mad at me and throw a major fit, 'cause I said her sister was a bitch. I want you to love me like my dog does, baby. When I come home, I want you to just go crazy. She never looks at me like she might hate me. I want you to love me like my dog. Why won't you love me like my dog does, baby?
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
It is Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. How you doing, kids? You are at jcontheline.com. If you were searching around for the morning show today on K-Wolf, it wasn't there because the radio station wasn't there. I don't know what happened overnight, but we got knocked off the air and they have not been able to get back on. So I'm in the dark like everybody else. I know nothing, and I'm just waiting for an update. But we have a podcast, and we have the end of college basketball. It was such a surprise that UConn won. Anybody out there didn't think that was going to happen? Cardinals could only get one run on the board through eight innings last night. Mason Wynn comes up in the ninth, knocks in a game-tying run. That forces it into extra innings. We end up losing 5-3. Series continues tonight at Busch. Blues, Blackhawks tomorrow night downtown. The Blues holding on to a very slim possibility of making the playoffs. Can I please address the situation regarding the St. Louis Battlehawks? Okay. I think it's great that we have spring football. I think it's great we have a team. I think it's awesome that people are so football starved and that we have a good enough product to bring them in. I mean, that's part of it right there. You got to have a good product. And they seem to be providing that. And 40,000 people show up the other night. That's all great. You know what's not great? Thinking that you are shoving this in the NFL's face or in Stan Kroenke's face or both. All right? Already starting to see these things popping up on social media. St. Louis deserves another NFL team. Do you see the way they're supporting the Battlehawks? First of all, I'm sure the Battlehawks really appreciate it. They're like, hey, What are you, just using us to try to get another NFL team by showing up for our games? We thought you were fans. So that doesn't, that wouldn't set well with me if I was a player or a member of the Battlehawks organization, okay? But here is a more blunt way of putting this. We are not getting another NFL team, okay? So it's great that we put 40,000 butts in the seats, but the NFL is not watching. Stan Kroenke is not watching. Do you know that we sued an NFL owner and we took $750 million from him, and that the other owners don't like that, and Kroenke doesn't like it, and that these people all have to vote when the issue of NFL expansion takes place? And do you understand that when you sue somebody and you take $750 million from them, they're not exactly going to be waving the flag for St. Louis? So if you like going to the games and you're enjoying the Battlehawks games and you watch them on TV and you just support them and maybe you wear a hat or whatever, all that's great. That's all fantastic. You really think that Stan Kroenke is sitting out there in California with everything else he's got going on, sitting there watching a spring football league team from a city that he couldn't stand and couldn't wait to leave and now hates even more because we took all that money? You really think Stan Kroenke is sitting out there in California on his big screen TV tuning in the game? And the NFL isn't paying attention either. The NFL has hated St. Louis from the beginning anyhow. We had a team here for 20 years and we never got a Super Bowl. The NFL hates St. Louis. And if there were some smattering, some little pocket of activity within the NFL that did like St. Louis, they wouldn't dare open their mouths now. We took their fucking money! We sued them and we won! The NFL is not coming back to St. Louis. They're manicuring the greens at Augusta. The Masters begins Thursday. Tiger Woods will compete. But it's Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, and John Rahm are all favored to win the $18 million purse. This is the 31st anniversary of the Colorado Rockies playing their first home game. 80,227 fans at that game. And 59 years ago today, 1965, the Houston Astrodome opened up with an exhibition game between the Astros and the Yankees. Mickey Mantle hit the stadium's first home run. The Astrodome was the first fully enclosed sports stadium and first air-conditioned event venue of its size. 70,000 fans, 70,000 seats. I don't know about how many fans there were, with enough space to include an indoor chapel and a bowling alley. And having lived in Houston for about a year, about a year and a half? I was in that place a couple of times. The funniest thing now is, you know, it's built right next to Energy Stadium where the football team plays, and it looks like a little toy stadium now. The Astrodome, really small compared to today's standards. But I was in there a couple of times. I was in there for the 1986 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. We broadcast live from there. And, you know, you go in there and you're like, it's weird in here. It was like playing a baseball game in a condo. All right, now again, it was 1965. And that was the available technology at the time. It's sort of like when everybody built highways, because much like the interstate highway system, look at all the roads they built, all the interstates they built all over the country. And, you know, 20 or 30 years later, they had to say, oh, we need like four more lanes out here. Well, it's the same thing in the Astrodome. They're like, oh, they built this giant stadium. And when people walked in 1965, they're like, my God, it's huge. And now you go in there and it's like, it's not huge. I still remember those shows from Houston. We figure out it's 1986, a Major League Baseball game is in Houston, and a lot of Cardinals are going to be playing in the game, and so let's go broadcast live. And back in those days, they'd say, okay, sure, go ahead. Radio stations had money, and they allowed you to do things. So it's not there anymore, but the hotel we stayed in was really within walking distance of the Astrodome. My recollection, it was a place, it was a hotel called Astro Village, maybe? Yeah, I think it's probably Astro Village. So we sat up in the lobby of the hotel, and we're sitting there doing the show. And just, you know, after an hour or so doing the show, we're all looking at each other like, why is everybody in this town so huge? there were people who were, you know, pushing 400 pounds walking around the lobby of the hotel. And we're like, we actually started calling the place Hugeston. We're broadcasting live from Hugeston. And so for, I want to say it was 3 or 4 days, we broadcast live from the place. And I'm telling you, everywhere we looked, all over our hotel, these enormous fucking people. Finally, on the last day, we're checking out, and I say something to the attendant there, the clerk behind the desk, and she tells me, oh, yeah, one of the most internationally famous fat farms where people with medical conditions causing them to be 400 pounds, they come from all over the world to go to this clinic that's right across the street, and so they stay here. I'm like, ah, information that could have helped me 4 days ago. Hugeston. And let me give you one more baseball note here. One more, because it was on this date in 1991. It's in my book, and it's one of my favorite stories to tell. We're broadcasting live from Ozzy's restaurant at Westport. I still like that place. So we're doing our big, opening day show. The Cardinals are on the road for opening day, so we figure we'd broadcast live anyhow. My recollection is they were opening the season in Chicago, as a matter of fact, in 1991. And so we're sitting there at Ozzy's and we're doing the show, and there's a big crowd and everybody's dressed in red. And we told people that we were going to have lots of prizes to give away. And in fact, we did, including a pair of tickets for the opening day St. Louis game. So in other words, after they were done with this road trip to open up the season, they were going to come home, play the home opener, and we were going to give you a pair of tickets to that. Well, how do I win them? Well, we'll tell you when you get there. We're just trying to get people into Ozzy's. When you do a show like that, you know, part of the deal is to try to get as many people to show up as possible, and then they invite you back. So we had a really big crowd. Everything was going great, and I decide I'm going to give away these tickets now. Everybody's sitting around just, you know, anxiously awaiting this whole thing. And I approached this one guy, and I said, here's the deal. I've noticed that you are not as dressed up in Cardinal gear as everybody else, but somewhere on your person, you've got to be wearing something that's got some red in it. Even though I can't see it, none of us here at this event can see it, but I will give you these tickets to this game if you, on your person, if you can produce something that is red. Now this guy starts examining himself. He takes off his jacket, which is not red. He's got no red in his shirt. You have any red stitching or anything in your undershirt? No. All right. Socks. Sometimes you get a little red border, you know, up around the calf. No, nothing red. Shoelaces. Anything. The bottoms of your sneakers there. Sometimes they make little bands of red. Sometimes there's some red in the shoe. All right. Now, the crowd is booing. First of all, they're mad at me because I'm going to give the tickets to this guy. At least they think I am, because the guy's going to have something red on his person. Now the guy is unbuckling his pants and he's pulling out his underwear to see if there's any red stitching in the underwear. And no, there's not. The crowd is booing this guy, practically trying to boo him right out of the place. And I'm standing there and I actually feel sorry for the guy now, because he was this close to a free pair of tickets. And the crowd, like I said, did I imagine the crowd was booing? Yeah, they're booing their asses off. I start to back away from the guy because I'm like, look, dude, I'm really sorry. I just assumed that you would have something on that had some red in it, and you don't. I'm sorry. I can't give you the tickets. That was the deal. That was the rules, and I'm sorry. And I start to walk away from the guy, and everybody's booing, and he starts waving his arms. He goes, wait. I'm like, did you find something red? And you're going to think I'm making this up, but I'm not. Like I said, it's in the book. The guy rolls up his sleeve to reveal that he had had some sort of accident, or maybe had fallen or something, but his arm was all scraped. And you guessed it. The guy takes his fingernail, reaches down, and yanks the scab, scratches the scab right off his skin. It starts to bleed. I give him the tickets, and the crowd goes fucking nuts. That's a fan. Except if it was a fan, why wasn't he wearing anything red on opening day?
Sad to sound like Regis there. You know, that's the best way to do a Regis impersonation, is you give yourself just a little bit of nasal quality, and every once in a while, you just yell! Gelman has combination skin! Did you hear me? Combination skin!
All right, enough enough with the sports. It doesn't get any better. I got to do all the eclipse stuff. Google searches for "my eyes hurt" skyrocketed right after the eclipse ended. They peaked around 3:20 in the afternoon. Searches for "why do my eyes hurt" were also up. If you did stare at the eclipse, the Weather Channel posted a list of symptoms to look for, like headaches, blurred vision, and a blind spot in one or both eyes. People have also been claiming to have eclipse sickness, even though there's no evidence that that's a thing. Reported symptoms range from insomnia, fatigue, no appetite, to one woman who claimed it knocked her off her menstrual cycle. A woman in Florida shot at cars on the highway and blamed it on the eclipse. She hit two people. Luckily, nobody died. She had just checked out of a hotel and told the staff she was going on a shooting spree. She said God told her to do so because of the eclipse. She's facing attempted murder charges. Joe Biden trolled Donald Trump for staring straight into the last eclipse in 2017. Meanwhile, Trump put out his own eclipse video. Instead of the moon, a silhouette of his head passed in front of the sun. Now, if you go to space.com, there's a big roundup of eclipse photos from all over the country. And the website thehill.com has time-lapse videos of different cities being plunged into the darkness. Cloud cover did put a hamper on things in some spots. Others got lucky, at least caught a little bit of a glimpse. Next one is in 2044, but that's just at a clip. I think it's like Montana or something like that. But the next real solar eclipse, the big one like yesterday, is 2045, 21 years away. If I'm not mistaken, I thought I read something that said it's going to go directly over Tampa, Florida. Speaking of maladies, something called the birthday effect is in the news. Statistically, it turns out you're more likely to die on your birthday than on any other normal day. It's partly because celebrating too hard with alcohol leads to more accidents and heart attacks. One study in 2015 said you're about 7% more likely. Another one in 2012 found there's a 14% higher chance of kicking the bucket on your birthday. This one just doesn't seem possible. A grandmother in East Cleveland, Ohio, named Joanne Gibson, recently got two tickets in the mail for doing 27 in a 20-mile-an-hour zone. Fine was $105. The weird part is she wasn't driving, and she has proof. An automated traffic camera handed out the ticket, and the footage clearly shows her car is hooked to a tow truck when it happened. So the truck driver was the one speeding, but the camera scanned Joanne's plate and issued her the ticket anyhow. It happened in December after her van broke down. She said she went to a nearby police department to show them the mistake, but they told her to contact a third-party vendor that operates the camera. Her local news channel did a story. The president of her city council is trying to help her get the ticket expunged. Even if the fine is waived, it could affect her insurance rates. The news report is mostly about how the camera shouldn't have been there in the first place. The council recently voted to have it removed, but the tow truck part seems like the more obvious reason to waive the ticket. Yeah, but the eclipse is over, and it gave Steve Templeton, the Channel 4 meteorologist, an entirely new opportunity to mispronounce Illinois. This fucker says Illinois, like it's an E, Illinois. I don't know why. This is the guy who also can't pronounce accumulate. He says accumulate, which is incorrect. Illinois. Illinois. So I guess he looked at it through his telescope. And there's nothing more fascinating to watch than people on TV trying to make it look like something's happening when nothing is happening. It's almost like the Super Bowl pregame show. 7 hours of, well, there's going to be a game in 6 hours. Now it's only 5 hours away. What's happening? Not a goddamn thing.
Hoo-ah! It's JC's 40th anniversary.
Wow, wait a minute. Whoa. Really?
Live from the Abbey Road Studios in London. The Morning Zoo. The Mets are pond scum. The Breakfast Club. Jamaica Tape for the Morning Zoo. The Cubs Cards Weekends in Chicago. Live from the Moscow McDonald's. The Morning Show Grant. Live from the Field of Dreams. The Call to Iran. The book, 20 Years of JC and the Breakfast Club, or 20 Minutes in the Dark with Madonna. The Food and Cash Salvation Bash. Live from the Grammys in L.A. and New York.
Store, The Physics of Santa, Knuckles the Burglar, the VP Fair Raid on Arnie Warren, live from the World Series, the break-in at Mike Bush's house, JC and the U-Man, Party Town.
You know, I watched you very closely. You didn't screw up once.
40 years of JC on 101.5 and 101.7.
I know you will all enjoy these pleasant memories.
K-Wolf.
Well, we do all that when we keep the radio station on the air, which we weren't able to do today. There was no morning show today, so we were backed up now, and we'll presumably be back on the air tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock on K-Wolf. But all throughout the month of April and May, I'm continuing my 40th anniversary retrospective, digging into the archives and playing back old stuff for you. And each day I usually play a couple of different things. Today we're going to just play you one because I want to play it in its entirety because it's that good. Back in the day of the Silver Bullet Band, trying to get to Bob Seger was next to impossible. That's sort of what happens. It's a very, very strange dynamic that takes place. Having covered entertainment for decades and decades on radio and TV and print to some extent too. Plus, I did a lot of that stuff before I even got to St. Louis. But when you are a new artist, and that means singer, actor, comedian, whatever, you're trying to get noticed. So you'll do an interview with anybody just to get your name out there to get more publicity. Then you make it big, and now you won't talk to anybody. Maybe Rolling Stone, New York Times, something like that. But otherwise, forget it. Then your career starts to wane, and especially you start to get really old. Now you're ready to talk to everybody again. It is the weirdest thing. Now, in this particular case, Bob Seger was putting out a new greatest hits album, and he had just been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 2004. For me, this is the most fun thing about still doing this job at this stage of my life and my career. Going back to all these old guys and women who have entertained us for 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 decades in some cases. And now you get to hear the stories. You get to hear what really happened. And these people seem genuinely happy about being able to talk to somebody. So like I said, this goes back to 2004. Bob had just been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And so, as part of our 40th anniversary celebration here on the J.C. Corcoran Podcast at jcontheline.com, it is a great interview with Bob Seger.
All you got to do is get up and into your kicks.
Come on, John, sing with me. Come on.
You're in a fix. Come back, baby. Rock and roll never forgets.
Bad idea.
You ruined it, not me.
Yeah, I think I'd be wounded if I tried to sing that high again.
Bob Seger!
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, got JC here, got the U-Man over there, and Jennifer Sparks. Bob, good morning. How you doing?
Very good.
Yeah, very good.
When we do that song now, we do it a half step down.
Whatever it takes, man, whatever it takes. Where do we find Bob Seger this morning? Because we were sort of surprised to hear that you were up early and maybe doing stuff with kids and stuff like that.
Well, right now I'm at my writing house, which is about 20 minutes north of my the family house, and out in the woods in Clarkston, Michigan.
Really?
Just north of Orchard Lake, where we live. Yeah, in Michigan.
I think that for a time there, maybe during the summer, we were neighbors for a while. I used to vacation in a little place called Weakwatonsing, Michigan, up near Harbor Springs.
Right, Harbor Springs.
I heard you had a place like sort of like right around the corner from there.
Yeah, they let me play that golf course once.
Oh, very good. Just one time, Bob?
Just one time.
Well, first of all, we got to congratulate you on the announcement that was made yesterday morning. Inductees into the 19th Annual Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Jackson Browne, George Harrison, Prince, Traffic, ZZ Top, The Dells, and Mr. Bob Seger. That's got to be a huge thrill for you.
It is. It's a tremendous thrill. You know, when I think back to the people that I grew up listening to, Elvis and Little Richard, and then later the Stones, Beatles, and Dylan. I mean, it's pretty heady stuff.
Yeah. You know, Bob, some guys are kind of lukewarm on actually going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for whatever reasons. Why do you think that is?
And
do they have a point? Yeah.
Sure. I'm not at all. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Do you start immediately thinking about what you want to say and who you want to thank and what songs you want to perform and stuff like that?
Yeah, I just found out actually the details because I've never been to one of them, and I guess we only do 2 songs. And so that's going to be tough picking which two.
I was going to say, now, just at first blush, what would you imagine those two songs would be?
Probably the one you just played.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Never Forgets would be a good one. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know what else. I'm going to have to come up with something.
You would think that with all of those musicians and the history of rock and roll and all of that, something like Turn the Page, because it's such a...
That could very well be it. Night Moves.
Night Moves. Man, I got to tell you, you're right. How do you narrow this down to two freaking songs?
Tough. I'm sure that's going to get hammered around from now till March.
Wow. Let's, by the way, make reference to Bob Seger's Greatest Hits Volume 2. Here's what you'll find on it. Understanding from the Motion Picture Teacher soundtrack. Fire Down Below, Her Strut, Beautiful Loser, Sunspot Baby, Kathmandu, Shame on the Moon, Fire Lake, Trying to Live My Life Without You, and that's live. Shakedown from Beverly Hills Cop 2, Manhattan, New Coat of Paint, Chances Are, along with Martina McBride from Hope Floats, Rock and Roll Never Forgets, and then let's talk about the other two songs on here. These are new songs.
Yeah, those were done Satisfied and Tomorrow. Those were done in 2002 and for the new album, which is going to be called Face the Promise, which comes out either spring or summer, probably summer, because we're going to try to finish it in March.
Which of those two songs would you like me to play at the conclusion of this interview?
Oh, it's up to you. You know, I like them both.
All right, I'm going to put in Satisfied. We're going to play that at the end of this interview.
Okay, so, fine. Well, it makes sense with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's cool. You, man?
You know, Bob, there are a lot of artists who would struggle to be able to put out two greatest hits. Obviously, you didn't have to struggle at all with all these great songs that you have. Somebody asked us to ask you about maybe an eventual box set that would be that would include all those other songs that came out on albums that are not even available on CD anymore.
Well,
what's up with that?
And, you know, a lot of people said, where's Ramblin' Gambler? Gambling Man and some other ones, and it just fit as a flow, I guess is what you'd say. And the only problem with Ramblin' Gambling Man was that it sounded really mono, you know, and it broke up the flow of the record. But you're right, Capitol is on me to do a box set eventually. Couple of years from now, yeah.
We also took some questions from our audience earlier this morning because they said, you know, if you had a chance to ask Bob Seger something after all these years, what would it be? Somebody said that apparently there was a rumor going around that one of the things that you wanted to do was go back on tour, and one of the reasons you wanted to go back on tour was so that your kids, particularly your younger kids, would get some idea of what the old man was all about in his heyday, and maybe they could experience some of that Bob Seger mania again.
Yeah, well, I've only got the two kids. They're 8 and 11. I never had kids before that. So my son, who's 11, remembers vaguely the tour. He was 4 when we did the 96-95 tour. So, but my daughter was 1, so she really wants to see it, and he wants to see it too. It's been a while.
It must be weird, though, to have had the career you have had, the gigantic career you've had, and yet you have two children who have no semblance of any of that.
That's right.
Two totally different lives that they know you in.
Yeah. Yeah, they know, obviously they see the records around, they see me signing the records all the time for charity and things of that nature, but, and fans, you know, when they send them, and it's just, you know, we just try to downplay it and kind of just be everyday parents, really.
Do they like your music, Bob?
Yeah, I don't think they really get it when I sing hard, like on Tomorrow, you know, I sounded like a wounded beast. You know?
What's wrong with Dad?
They don't get that.
What's wrong with Daddy?
What's wrong with Dad? What's he upset about? But, or Her Strut or something like that, mm-hmm. You know, but what they like is the poppies, the ballads, and things like that. You know.
Yeah. All right. So somebody asked us to ask you about. Apparently, there was an instance back in the 1970s here in the state of Missouri where you played. We think it might have been a cave, and somebody said,
"That's right."
Ask Bob about some of the worst concert venues he's ever performed.
That's
at.
Probably the worst. It was in Festus, Missouri.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly right. And I remember I played with Nugent.
Right.
And I was complaining, and Nuge, he set me right. I got to admit, he said, you know, you're booked, you're playing. These people are enjoying it. Shut up and play.
I picture Nugent doing that too.
Yeah,
do you have a close relationship
exactly
with?
Right.
Do you still have a close relationship with Ted?
I see him all the time.
Do you?
Oh. He's a great guy. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just talk about another story that had surfaced about Bob Seger, and that is that you recently were on jury duty. Is that correct?
Well, not recently. That's about 5 years ago.
All right. And what kind of a case was it?
Fraud.
And
federal.
And did you make any effort to get out of it, or did you just figure, what the hell, let's go
ahead and do this? No, I went. Yeah. It didn't last all that long. I think it was about 9 days.
All right.
That's long.
That is kind of long.
Yeah,
it was
tedious. The judge was falling asleep. The jurors, we would crack up because the judge would be nodding off.
So much for our legal system there. All right. Now, there's a famous Southwest Airlines commercial in which the guy is on stage and says, thank you, Detroit, or something like that. And it's like, no, we're in Cleveland. Any incidents of confusion on stage or any just bizarre things over the long, illustrious career of Bob Seger where you say to yourself, oh, my God, I'll live to be 100 and I'll never live that down?
No, not really. I was lucky. I mean, I've seen Spinal Tap and say the wrong town, and that never happened to me that I recall. But that was something that you were petrified of. You catch yourself occasionally, say the right city.
Talking live with Bob Seger here. Bob, years before the war broke out there, you sang Like Iraq. What were you thinking?
That song was never a hit song, was it? I mean, it was the commercial.
The highest it charted was 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember you got into a discussion about this with Bob Costas when he was doing the old Later Show, because I'm one of those people.
That was one of my favorite interviews I ever did.
It was sensational. And
a great interviewer that guy is.
And, of course, he lives right here in St. Louis. He's a pal of ours.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, I'm one of those people whose back sort of goes up. With Michael Jackson being in the news and having sold Revolution for the Nike commercials, and I don't usually like it when the songs are sold to push commercial products. But Bob asked you about that, and you gave a tremendous answer about why you allowed the publishers to use Like a Rock to sell Chevys. Do you remember what the answer was?
Well, basically to save jobs in my area, because at the time they weren't doing too well, GM, and the campaign had tested so positively, and I'd actually turned it down for about a year, and a guy came into, we were having lunch, my manager and I, and a guy came in and literally walked up to our table and said, how come you never do anything for the auto companies? And I said, and after we left, I said, that was a plant to my man. He said, no, that was real. And I said, I'm not above this. I'm going to do it. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Bob, in the 60s and the early 70s, you were working hard. You were getting some results, but not necessarily probably the kind of results you were looking for in terms of acceptance and commerciality. And then the Live Bullet album came out. And, back in the 70s, people think, when you think of live albums, you think of Peter Frampton's Double Live, and he gets so much credit for that being such a groundbreaking live release. But, man, Double Live was almost as big as that, was it not?
Yes.
I mean,
it was
eventually. Huge.
Yeah. It sold about an equal amount eventually, yeah.
When did you know that Bob Seger was no longer just a successful musical act, but that the thing was really a worldwide phenomenon? When did it actually hit you? Holy geez, we are off the page with this.
Yeah, I would say fall of 76, late fall of 76, when we got a platinum album for both Live Bullet and Night Moves on the same night.
Wow.
My record company president at the time was, I believe, was Don Zimmerman, and he came in with both of them, and they took photos, and I said, whoa, two at once.
And those songs, Bob, like Night Moves and Main Street particularly, are those necessarily stories about things that you yourself experienced, or are those sort of like composite characters of guys that you had met? I mean, how much personal storytelling is going on there?
Night Moves and Main Street are fairly autobiographical, yes. Mm-hmm. Although I was always trying to reach for something universal in each lyric, and I felt if I was too autobiographical, it would just be too inside. So
what you're saying is there was actually a girl that you remember was a dancer, and you used to see her leave and that kind of stuff. So all that stuff.
That part is not true.
It's artistic license.
But the idea of standing outside, it was a little street actually off of Main Street, Ann Arbor, called Ann Street, and all the college kids went down there because they'd have blues groups from Chicago play there, and it was a very R&B type of thing, and that's what I grew up listening to. I actually grew up in a black neighborhood in Ann Arbor, and I would hear the music from WLAC in Nashville, all the black music in the neighborhood. You know, people like Garnett Mims and James Brown and the Tams and Solomon Burke and Wilson Pickett, and that's the kind of stuff I grew up listening to.
And the rest is history, really, as they say. And here we are with a second volume of Bob Seger's Greatest Hits and a special on K-Hits 96 Sunday afternoon from 5 until 6. And again, a real good compilation of stuff on Greatest Hits Volume 2. Anything else going on that we should know about that you want to tell your fans about right now?
Not really. I told the band two nights ago when I found out about 7 o'clock in the evening two nights ago that we're going to start rehearsing for the Hall of Fame thing, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Monday, March 15th, 2004, at the Waldorf Astoria. Nice joint, by the way.
Yeah. I also find I got to wear a tux. Oh boy!
Well, probably
it's
the one.
Hard to imagine doing rock and roll in a tux.
Well, Bob, but the one that you wore for your high school prom probably still fits, right?
Right.
All right.
My dreams.
All right, on the record with Bob Seger, Sunday afternoon, 5 to 6 here on KHITS 96, and Bob Seger, Greatest Hits, Volume 2, in your record stores right now. Bob Seger, we thoroughly enjoyed this. Your music gets played out the ass here on this radio station.
Well,
let me tell you, you got your fans here in St. Louis, and if you ever do go back on tour, if there's ever anything going on that you want your fans in St. Louis to know about, trust me, they want to know about it, and they will be in line for it. Bob Seger.
I guarantee if we go on tour, we'll be in St. Louis.
Thank you very much, Bob Seger.
All right, thanks, guys and gal.
Take care, Bob.
Thank you.
So long.
We had done an interview with Bob Seger a couple of years prior to that, and I distinctly remember telling him, your personality and your temperament is really surprising me here, because everything I had ever known about Bob Seger was about this dark, dour, very intense rock and roll star with these incredibly introspective lyrics in his songs. And here we are all just yucking it up. He's like, you know what? There's a famous Rolling Stone writer, Timothy White, I believe it was his name. And Bob Seger said, he said the same thing to me. About an hour into the conversation, he's like, I thought you were going to be this big, badass guy. I was really nervous about coming in here. So either our perception has been off all of these decades, or maybe there's been a little change in the life and the temperament overall of Bob Seger. All I know is, that's one of my favorite things in this archive I'm looking at here, with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of old interviews, moments on the air, crazy things that have happened. That's one of my favorites. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024 is in the can. We are here every Monday through Thursday at 11 a.m. at jcontheline.com. And every morning that the radio station is able to stay on the air, not like this morning where we got knocked off, but we expect to be back on bright and early at 101.5 in St. Louis, 101.7 out west, and streaming at kwolf.com. Have a great remainder of your day. We'll talk to you again in the morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.